Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
After all that positivity now, Richard Hogan, the family psychotherapist, joins us now, and we'll knock the positivity out of him now, Richard. We're going to talk about affairs. extramarital affairs. This will be a tricky subject now in a lot of kitchens around the country, but anyway, let's see how we do. Richard, are there common reasons for affairs to start?
I think it's important to acknowledge it is a tricky conversation, and it's quite taboo. You know, it's quite a taboo subject, but affairs have always been present. And just before I answer that question, I suppose to put it in context.
We,
you know, the modern Homo sapien has been around for about 160,000 years. We've only been getting married for about 4,000 of those years. And then we've only been marrying for romantic notions, you know, not that, about over 200 years since the agrarian way of life came in. We started thinking about paternity and property, and that changed our understanding of marriage.
Yeah, and so, then Luke saying earlier that life expectancy used to be 35.
Exactly.
So a marriage wasn't exactly for the long haul.
It wasn't. Exactly. And now we're living so much longer and all that. Okay, for sure. And I do think there's danger years. And I always
Hang on. Yeah. Just let's stick with that context for a minute. So before let's put the horse before the cart. So, do we have too much expectation of marriage?
Well, I think marriage is a romantic notion that one person can satiate and fulfill all of our needs, right? And when an affair is exposed, it shatters that romantic notion. And I think at times, perhaps it can be an unrealistic expectation at times for people. And it can cause, and I think there's people listening to this, as you said, in the kitchen or wherever around Ireland, listen to this, who have been incredibly hurt by the behaviour of their partner. And affairs have all, the thing about affairs, they're taboo and it's a tricky thing to talk about, but they've always been present.
Okay. So danger years.
Danger years. What I'd see in my clinic and my work, and what I've understood personally as well, from about 45 to 52 is what I would see as the danger years. You know, that's where I would see real problems. And when I meet people who come into my clinic, that's where I'd meet people talking about the fact that someone has come into their orbit, someone that they used to, you know. And I would say in a modern context, Brendan, we've never had more opportunity to have affairs, but we've also never had more opportunity to get caught having our affairs, because the amount of people I would meet that would have been exposed through their technology, through their apps, through their messaging, through the devices being connected to each other, coming out through an iPad or, you know, the message coming out through a different device that they weren't aware they were connected to. So we've never had more opportunity to have an affair, but also to be exposed in that affair. And I would say 45 to 52, the reason that is, and this is what I would see really as the reasons for affairs, because traditionally we would say that men have affairs because that they're kind of like a genetic code there, that they have to be promiscuous. They want to, you know, have other sexual relations with other people to kind of
spread the seed
out. I was trying to think of a nice way to say
the selfish gene.
Exactly. And that's why men do it. And if a woman has an affair, it's because of some hunger for meaning and some emotional intimacy. And both of those are incorrect, right? And the last one there, it kind of suggests that women aren't sexual or have lusts or quickenings, as even Bolan would call it. Of course they do, right? And so we're sexual beings. And 45 to 52, I think, is where, if you think about the data, 47 is our most unhappy year. I think in those years, we can be very unhappy. And I think we can lose connection. The word is connection. We can lose ourselves in the relationship. We can lose ourselves in parenting. We can lose that earlier identity that we had. And I think an affair, somebody comes into our orbit and we've lost connection with the person that we started off. And I think we all start having a relationship with an affair. We all have a love affair at the start and we generally don't live with the person at the start. And so they're not, you know, there's a separation between us and it's a real exciting thing. And maybe it might be physical for the first time and you're exploring things that you mightn't have ever explored. That's an affair, right? And so we all start out with a love affair. And then reality comes in and life comes in and busyness comes in and chores comes in and the old cliche, familiarity breeds contempt. And I think contempt and indifference is really the seeds of affairs. Okay. And so by 45, 52, as I see it, that's where that kind of stuff kind of comes in. And then somebody comes into your orbit that reconnects you with your earlier self. You know, and I think that's where the danger is. And that's why I think it's an important conversation to be aware of the dangers, you know, yeah, of somebody okay. coming into your orbit and being aware of it.
So what you're saying is it's not necessarily about that person. It's about the person rediscovering something in themselves, like youth kind of like, or who they think they were before.
I think,
yeah?
No, absolutely. I think we feel it as a rejection for sure. Of course, we've been rejected. Okay, I think that's a really thing that people feel in a when they're the person who's been injured or deceived in a relationship. But in my experience working with it, it's generally about the person who has done it, not about a rejection of the person, but about finding something that was lost in themselves. And I know that might be striking for people to hear,
yeah.
But I think from what I've looked at and what I've talked, when I'm talking to people in my clinic, a lot of the conversations about it made me feel young again, all right, that's a thing, for sure. If you think about 45 to 52, there's an idea that after that, there's less sex in your life, or there's coming to a conclusion of your sexual identity, and that this can be kind of like an almost like a last hurrah, or like a treat that brings you back into that sexual life. Because think about it, what is that? It's vitality, it's intensity, it's freedom, it's autonomy. They're all massively significant things. And if somebody allows us to tap back into that, you know, that's going to, you know, really impact the reward centers of your brain. And then the structure of the affair itself, secretive, you know, and you don't get to meet the person all the time. So the separation, the very structure of the affair.
Is set up for excitement in your life.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I had a client say to me there recently enough, I thought it was so interesting because this is what I've developed in my thinking working clinically. He said to me, when my partner became okay with the idea of a polyamorous relationship, kind of like having other partners, he said, I lost the desire to cheat. And I think that is a really crucial thing. We crave, I mean, the secrecy, we crave the idea of somebody really wanting us but can't having us, and that can become like a reward center fire in the brain.
It kind of sounds a bit childish in a way when you put it like that.
Well, I think it can be an incredibly childish activity and a very selfish activity, and an activity I think there's no single transgression that can absolutely rob a couple of their identity, their joy, right? And the couple itself, you know, the data would show us that we divorce most of all because of affairs, right? And so that one single act, that can be quite selfish. I mean, we're in the age of extreme individualism, no doubt about it. Okay. And so we're told all the time, do what makes you happy, you know? And so we try to, you know, we can often live in that kind of like ideology. And I would really kind of say that logic can bring us into like really not working in the interest of our future selves. And collapsing our lives, everything that we've worked towards can be annihilated in an affair.
Okay, so someone listening out there now, who's maybe, is there a temptation phase initially, kind of a way they want to, someone who's thinking now that they're tempted or whatever, are they bored? Boredom
can be it for sure. Yeah, familiarity, regularity, routine, all of these things. Somebody
so
comes into
in
your
that
orbit.
Space.
Yeah, somebody comes into your orbit in your workspace. I mean, you put Homo sapiens together in a room, and there will be digressions. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, what are you going to say to that person?
Well, I would say you have to always understand that your behavior. You know, every behavior has consequence. And every time you choose a behavior, you're choosing all those potential consequences. And we don't often think about the potential consequences. And from my experience working with it, the potential consequences are devastating at times.
No good outcomes generally.
I have not met a good outcome.
Wow, okay.
I have not met somebody in my clinic that said I had an affair. And it was a really great experience.
Are there situations though where somebody, do people have an affair because it obviously means they're very unhappy in their own marriage and that they should be getting out anyway, no?
Well, I just on the counter of that point, people can have affairs and be in a happy marriage, right? I think that's possible, right?
Okay.
And I think people can have affairs because they're in very unhappy marriages for sure. And it's a way of kind of, you know, finding some piece of happiness. And I suppose what I would say in that instance is being more authentic and more honest about that relationship, you know, and talking honestly about it. And if separation and divorce is what's required, I would say that would lead you to live a happier, more authentic perhaps life, you know, than secrecy and deception.
So it's not the way to
deal with that. I would say it can be quite a negative way of dealing with it.
And when you say secrecy and deception as well, so quite corrosive for the person having the affair as well as everyone else.
I think for everybody, Brendan. I think for everyone, it's a corrosive experience. And I think the person, let's just say if somebody's single and having an affair with a married person, man or woman, I think it's a corrosive for them as well. It's such a taboo. We don't talk about it at all. You know, we don't really get into that and say, well, what is this? Why do people do it? And, you know, what is the devastation left afterwards? And can you, a really important question, can you heal after this? And of course you can, you know. But okay. We launch into...
We'll come back to some of those things because you've thrown a lot in there. We'll break that down. So can we go back to the temptation business? It's not... So you were saying if people are thrown together in a situation and all that, that it is normal that people might feel temptations. So flirtations, temptations, being attracted to people... That's normal. You don't have to act on it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, we're mammals. We're social beings. We absolutely crave connection. And of course, the actual affair itself, it kind of like, you know, there's no clear definition. What do we mean? Are we talking about sexting? Are we talking about an emotional connection? Am I talking about viewing pornography? Am I talking about, you know, meeting somebody and, you know, having an emotional connection with them? Or am I talking about a protracted, you know, year-long, two-year-long emotional and sexual relationship? Or am I talking about a one-night stand here? Or am I talking about somebody going for a massage where there's kind of a sexual thing at the end of that there? So what do we mean when we say affair? I suppose, and it kind of, it's outside definition itself. And in the modern how I see it is where there's a kind of an intersection between the emotional and the physical.
Okay, so are you saying that the other types that maybe are more glancing kind of thing, like a one-off situation or something purely sexual or whatever, less damaging to everything?
It has less damage, and I think it has, and I suppose what we're talking about, the meaning making of stuff, you know, the meaning behind the affair. I think in my experience, and I've worked with this a lot, people would say that, you know, the partner had a lapse, let's say, but it's much easier for them to work through that, I think, than the emotional intensity, the secretiveness, the idea of like going on a holiday with somebody else, the idea of building a kind of a secretive life with somebody else. I think that is so destructive and so corrosive. I'm not diminishing for a moment someone's experience with their partner who has had, let's say, a one-night stand. That can be an incredibly difficult situation to experience, of course, because, as I said, it can fracture your understanding of yourself. But the affair, I think, the protracted affair, Brendan, can really make someone question, were we ever in love? Did he or she ever love me? Was it ever real? Was there ever authenticity between us? Did any of it make sense? Was any of it real for us? You know, was it all a lie? I mean, there's a real existential crisis that it can bring you to.
Yeah, that's pretty devastating. Okay. Before we come on to how people, there's people asking here, can a relationship survive? Before we get on to that, can I go back to, you said it's corrosive for everyone involved.
Yeah.
There are, so the various parties here, right? Okay, so we've talked maybe about the two spouses involved in this situation. The other man, the other woman.
Yeah.
Corrosive for them as well?
I think so, because you're not valuing yourself. I think sometimes people, and they don't even understand the paradigms that's running underneath there. They think maybe that they're doing it because they're desirable, or, you know, they're more desirable than the person's partner, or that they don't want to get caught in the mundane banality of like relational life and all that. But I think if you really stripped it down, if you did like what I do, like the genogram, and you really tore it down, you'd see very negative paradigms in there. I don't think I'm worthy. I don't think I'm enough. I think I can only be desired or used. And I think they're kind of some of the stuff that kind of feed into someone's psychology around being the other person in there.
Okay, so not good for them. In terms of then, there are other people affected in the broader, call it community, friend group, family and stuff, people who know things, all of that kind of thing. Mm. It has all those effects as well, yeah?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Sorry, can you give me that? I missed that.
Say the confidant, the person who knows, or the people who know.
Oh, yeah.
They're not told, who see stuff going on and everything.
Yeah.
And then, like, that whole question about, well, what am I supposed to do with this? Like, you know, do you tell? Do you not tell? It's complicated for people in the orbit, isn't it?
I've worked with people who have told their best friend about an affair, and that has caused huge rift. And so I'm left questioning as a therapist and a clinician, well, what's the best situation here? You know, do you tell, if you find out that your best friend has been cheated on or is in the process of being cheated on, what's the best solution to it? I suppose in my experience personally, and as a clinician here, I think that going to the person who's having the affair is probably the best way to deal with that, because what I've noticed is that the injured party can feel actually incredibly embarrassed, and they shouldn't, of course, and they feel the stigma around it and shame, and it can push them away from the friend who's exposed it. They can project some of their hurt onto the person that has exposed the affair, and I think probably the best way to kind of go about that, and as you said, it's an all-encompassing thing. It can be a devastating experience for everybody that's orbiting this thing. I think the best way to deal with that is perhaps going to the person in question and saying, look, if you don't tell, I will tell. So I'm, you know, okay. And that's the best kind of way of dealing with that.
Children then, how does it impact on children?
Yeah, I suppose personal experience growing up, and I've worked with so many families, and I've sat there in the clinic. I don't think any of us as children want to think about our parents as sexual beings. Do we?
Yeah.
You know, and I've sat with children who have said they discovered their father's affair or their mother's affair. And I have watched that sense of reality be absolutely destroyed inside the child as in concrete norms about fidelity and infidelity. And it kind of, I think personally, for a long time, it develops an unshakable belief that people will cheat on you.
And so that the whole worldview.
The whole world. Like, I mean, if you think of, just not to go too academic, but Hamlet, his mother starts to sleep with his uncle, you know, it taints his whole worldview of women and relationships. And I think that's what I sit with clinicians. It shakes, it's an unshakable belief that people will let you down.
Text here. My mother had an affair in the 80s when I was a child. I found out about it when I overheard a conversation I shouldn't have. It destroyed me as the years passed. It still resonates and raises anger and hurt as I hear Richard speak about it today. So that's the kids. Okay. Very simple text here. Can you ask your guest, can a relationship survive an affair? So I suppose that is the next big thing. How can people get past this?
I think they can, Brendan. I think relationships sometimes collapse because of it. I think relationships just about survive it, but I think relationships can thrive again. And that's what I noticed, right, is that an affair is an incredibly disruptive thing. But here's the hope. Here's the Luke O'Neill stuff, right? Here's the hope, right? That what I often see sitting clinically is that it opens up a new conversation. And I think what gets in the way of people healing is that there's too quick of an ask of forgiveness by the partner who's transgressed here. There's too quick of a desire for forgiveness because it's very uncomfortable to watch your partner really struggle because of your behaviour and what your choice was in that behaviour. But if you allow your partner to express what they've experienced and what this has brought into their lives, I think that's the kind of the fundamental seeds. And for the person who has experienced this and been injured, I think we can ask questions like, you know, I don't know if you ever watched Friends, but when Ross and Rachel, let's say, and Ross had he had a one night stand, Rachel's asking him in the sitting room, she's saying to him, you know, was she better than me? And he says to her, you know, well, she was different. No one likes change. You know, it's a bit of comedy there, but there's something about that question. Was she better than me? Where did you do it? All those questions are really destructive. Better questions to ask is, what did this affair mean to you? And what did you find in that person that you felt you couldn't find in our relationship? And do you value our relationship going forward? Do you want to go forward in this relationship? And here's the next part. If we do go forward in this relationship, it's not the relationship we had before, because what was ever in there has now changed irrevocably because of this. And I'm not going to be the same person. And so it's almost like, I think, second, third marriage kind of scenario within the one marriage. You kind of go, that's a line in the sand. That was what we had before. We're going to have a new relationship from this point forward. And what I've often had, and I've sat there, it's incredible particularly for a woman to say, I've never said this before, but don't you think I wanted to have an affair? Don't you think I could have had affairs with people? Do you not think that I could have launched out there and you know, done something hedonistic myself, but I didn't, for you, for the kids, for the family, whatever it is, you know? And that's a really moment of a really honest conversation. And it's like almost you see the couple becoming almost kind of excited again about each other's company. And so it's like you can build a relationship out of that. And also the fear of loss sometimes reconnects people physically, because ultimately sex is like death's antidote, right? And so, you know, and so it can be something about defeating death and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, marriage, and you lose your kind of intimacy. Doesn't that exciting intimacy might wane over the years? And when you're, as I said, about mid-40s, early 50s, it can be kind of something that you're just passing each other in the night, you're kind of ships. That's kind of like what happens to us. But if we stay connected to each other, and it's all about connection, what we're talking about here, Brendan, it's all about staying connected in the busyness of our lives, so that somebody who comes in, it's not like a frenzy for us because we're so hungry for something. You know, when someone comes into our orbit, it can be okay. A frenzied thing for us because they're giving us some insights into what we were like before.
Okay. So I would hesitate to say a better relationship beyond.
Well, it can be. Absolutely. I'm not saying for a second that I'm prescribing an affair, but I'm saying that it can be a better relationship.
Here's a question here. I'm postmenopausal and not interested in sex anymore. Yeah. And while I love my partner still, I'm convinced in my head that he will inevitably have an affair. Can't get my head around how I might react to that, but kind of feel it's fair enough if it does. Does this happen often?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I'd meet that a lot. And I suppose the idea of like the menopause is an important part of the conversation, and the idea of second life after the menopause and that. And I would say to that person, I think, you know, sitting down with your partner and having an honest conversation about it and about your feelings about physical intimacy would be a very important. I would say that the problem here is, Brendan, we don't talk about it. And what I said there in the last piece there about the couple finally having a really honest conversation and they're excited by the fact that they're speaking honestly to us, to each other. I would say sitting down and having an honest conversation with your partner.
Do it before the affair happens.
Do it before the affair. Absolutely. Do it before an affair happens.
Are a lot of marriages, in your experience, from what you're seeing in the rooms, are they kind of built on things unsaid often and like little lies that become big lies and just...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the unspoken, the kind of simmering, the stuff that's not said, you know, that gets said in different ways by proxy kind of conversations, by proxy arguments, yeah? The real stuff that doesn't actually get said. That's the kind of rot wood, you know, that if you get that out and you expose it, who knows what the marriage could be.
Okay.
Because we fall into, this is, you know, the homeostasis balance. We fall into balance. We can disrupt that balance. Nothing disrupts balance in a marriage like an affair. And so that can be a reorienting of the balance again, which can actually, as you said there, lead to maybe a healthier relationship.
Okay, but you could equally do it through a very difficult but real conversation.
That's the best way to do it for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a long text here, but just a bit of it. Like, it's not for me to judge any person or unhappy situation they may be in, this texter says, but if parents could only see the damage done to their teenage children as a result of family breakdown, they would think twice. As a teacher who worked in a pastoral role for many years, highly academic young people failing to reach their potential, young people turning to substance misuse stemming from betrayal they feel when a parent lets them down, think before you destroy the life of a young person. That makes sense?
Yeah. I think the family is the most important thing for a successful outcome for children, for sure. And I think at times we can live in a society that's kind of anti-family in some ways. And I'm not suggesting for a second that you stay in a relationship that's violent or negative or any of that. Of course, you must remove yourself from a relationship that's dangerous and, you know, detrimental to your children's safety, of course. But the family, that system, Brendan, that is the pillars of a child's life. Those parents are the pillars of a child's life. When you bring your children into adult themes, like their sexual life, like affairs, I'd often have a parent sitting in front of me saying, should I tell my children about the affair that my partner had? You know, and I'm trying to work that out. Why would you want to tell the children this? For what outcome goal are you hoping here? You know, to tell the children this transgression here that's happened in your personal adult life here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's devastating for a child to be brought into those adult themes. So as your texter said there, it's a really deep and it's profound text for sure. The family is everything, Brendan.
Okay, it left scars on you, yeah.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
for sure, an unshakable thing for a long time, about fidelity.
Yeah, okay, fascinating. And look, there's loads of text still coming in. I think you've hit a chord here with people. Okay, psychotherapist Richard Hogan, thank you very much. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.